It is Locked On Jazz for the 18th of May. Leftover questions from yesterday involving Cephalosha, four starters, trading, and Paul George. A season in review on Alec Burks and Royce O'Neal, and some thoughts on the Rockets and Warriors. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope things are going well for you today. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and a look behind the curtains. We will not do shows next week. I'm taking a week with my son, so that today is the last day of those shows, so just thought I'd make sure I let you know. I want to touch on today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, Intercap Lending, and then just wanted to give a quick shout-out. Optimal Norms has been a great sponsor for us, Mason Nichols, and as the high school sports season kind of wraps up, they're going to take a step aside, but I wanted to just give a big thanks to Mason Nichols. He's kind of moved back here into Utah and started Optimal Norms and trying to get it up and running and doing some neat stuff with that. So if the time comes for you where you're looking for, you know, kind of performance enhancing consulting, mental performance consulting, not illegal performance enhancing, but mental performance enhancing. Remember Optimal Norms, but I just want to thank them for being involved and with us here for that last little run. And as the school season, sports seasons wrap up, though, frankly, summer is a pretty good time to kind of step into some of these new ventures. But nonetheless, wanted to just thank Optimal Norms. All right, let's get to the show. I had leftovers from yesterday. I got to ask the question, do you think we can trade into the lottery? What the Jazz did last year is pretty unusual, particularly into the top 10, is almost unheard of, and they didn't obviously go top 10. So, you know, getting after 11 is where 50% of picks after 11 don't become rotation players. I mean, frankly, what Denver did mathematically makes all the sense in the world. They gave up a post 11 pick in the draft for another pick in the draft and a known commodity of a player who you can look at and see is really good. I mean, from a pure numbers analysis standpoint, if you don't have Donovan Mitchell circled, it makes a decent amount of sense. The 24th pick is not as good as the 13th, but you've got an established player that you can see as a rotation player in Trey Lyles. And after 11 in a draft, most players, 50% of all players never become rotation players. Which may be the case with Justin Jackson. I'm not sure he's going to be a rotation player. And we'll see what happens with DJ Wilson. And we'll see what happens with TJ Leaf and Harry Giles got to get healthy, and I'm not convinced on Terrence Ferguson. Like that very well may, in fact, happen in this draft. It just happened to be that the Jazz at 13 got this kid who's just so special, and that makes that draft look, that pick look just absurd, or that trade. But it on paper, it's not a terrible deal. So it's not something what the Jazz were able to do last year from 24 is just not something that usually happens. And you'd have to have that piece. We don't have that young piece now, right? We don't have that Trey Lyles piece. We frankly have a very limited trade possibility roster, in my opinion. That's not a negative. That's just a status of where we are. I don't think we're particularly interested in moving Joe Ingles. I don't think we're interested in moving Rudy Gobert. I don't think we're interested in moving Donovan Mitchell. Favors is a free agent. Jay Crowder is probably, you know, salary-wise somewhat movable, but salary's so good, who knows? And then the next group of guys, we've talked, Dante's not movable because he's a free agent, then Royce is not movable because his contract's too good for us. So the next group of guys is that Cephalosha, Jrebko, Udo, where people are getting off of money. That's the value on them. And then Alec, I think you would actually have to put our first-round pick with Alec to get a deal done there. So now that gets interesting on whether or not there's a team out there that has a money problem coming. And so
are we willing to take send Alex 11 and take back somebody's 15 or 16, and it's a better player, and so maybe our pick goes with it or something of that sort, where they take Alec, you know, they save $5 or $6 million this year, and that allows them to go sign a free agent or not be in the luxury tax or something of that sort. So another question I got asked in that process is, are the other four starters set? You know, everything feels as though that would be the case. That and they're talking about Derek, obviously, is not set. And so is Rubio, Ingles, Mitchell, Gobert set? I would be surprised if those four are not starters when the year starts next year. Now, you know, a lot of things could happen, but I'd say that to me, the two kind of positions, and I've said this a lot and I will say it again, that jump out to me are obviously what are we doing at power forward? And as much as I think we've shown that you can be successful with Jarebko and Cephalosha and Crowder, like, I think there's a higher level power forward stretch four that maybe you can go get. I don't know that, actually. It's not the easiest thing in the world to go find that. And when I come back, maybe I'll do a feature with you showing just how, like, we define what we want out of a stretch four, and then it's incredible how few guys in the league actually hit that. And that's where the Derek scenario comes more likely. You know, it's interesting, by the way, on the draft. I was looking at some draft stuff last night. If Mo Bamba goes to Dallas, do they then not sign a center? I mean, it takes them out of the DeAndre Jordan mix, that's for sure. And they may be out of the DeAndre Jordan mix anyway. It is a fascinating offseason that's coming because there's a lack of free agent money and a huge desire for roster turnover. And those two don't usually go together. Next question I didn't get to yesterday involved Thabo Cephalosha. And I think so the question is, does Thabo's knee injury dictate how the Jazz treat Thabo? So the Jazz love Thabo, all aspects of him. You do have to be honest about the fact that he is just turned 34 years old on May 2nd, so happy birthday. But he's 34. That's getting pretty old. His last few years are 61, 52, 75, 62, 38 games. He was shooting it pretty well. He's a 35% three-point shooter. And he's at an interesting stage physically where he's become, with age, a little slower defending the three, which has made him more adaptable to defending the four. Though that mix match is interesting because he was actually a pretty good defensive rebounder this year at 18%, and we'll get into that probably more when we do our Thabo season in review when I come back. But he's only an average rebounder overall at 11, and 18% is not even that great. It's just okay. So he's a little bit of he can play the stretch four. He's not a great rebounder. He's not a knockdown shooter, but he's an average three-point shooter. And he was better than average this year at 38%. I think he had his second or third best shooting year of his career. I think he had his highest scoring year of his career other than his year he got traded out of Oklahoma City. But maybe, I think he might have had his highest scoring year of his career this year. So anyway, the analysis on Thabo comes down to, what are your other choices? You know, really, what are your other choices? And are your other choices better than Thabo? And what position do you see him, or maybe his versatility be able to play both is the mix. The other question I think is interesting is, I know Paul George would unlikely to come to Utah, but is he actually the perfect fit? And the answer to that might be yes. That he's 28 years old. He's got, you know, we can try to criticize him for his warts, but he averages 20 points a game, so he's a bona fide scorer that would relieve pressure. He's an elite-level defensive player. He could play the three or the four. You probably would move Ingles off the bench. It would cost you, just so you have an understanding, I think to do it, the Jazz would have to renounce the rights to every free agent. So Favors, Exum, Cephalosha, Jarebko, Udo, and maybe still move one other player. I would suspect the Jazz will ask to talk to him. He may decide he has no interest in that. But yeah, I think absolutely he would be the perfect player. I mean, you're talking about a five-time All-Star and a three-time All-NBA and a three-time All-Defensive player. And more than that, you're talking about someone who's efficient and a great shooter. And, you know, I think he didn't look great in the series with us as the series went on. And that can be because of Russell or that. But yeah, I think, I don't think he's ever played as I think he'd be, you know, our best player at that point, or at least our second best behind Rudy. And then let Donovan develop. I don't think he's ever played with a player that, off the top of my head, with a Donovan skill set, even in Indiana. He's with George Hill and David West and Roy Hibbert and Lance Stevenson. So he's never been in that ilk of of having a teammate like that. So yeah, he would be perfection. He's good on he's one of the best catch and shoot guys in the league. So his profile is pretty similar to Donovan. He's better than Donovan on the pick and roll. Donovan will get there, but he's pretty good on the pick and roll. But what he really is he's just an incredible knockdown shooter. So you could do everything with him. I mean, he's great. He's not a great transition player. That's always the one that's a little surprising to me for all of his skills. And he gets hot and he gets cold. But I don't think he's ever had, you know, I'm ignoring Russell. I just think that's a unique circumstance that is very hard to, very, very hard to kind of make a difference on. So, yeah, Paul George would be perfect. And if we could pull it off, you do it. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. I want to tell you guys about the Kona. I am driving the Kona right now. It's really nice. So the SUV market has the Santa Fe, which is the big SUV. It's the one we just bought. It's got the third row of seats. It's kind of that size, right? So Hyundai doesn't have the Suburban. Okay, so in the SUV market, you've got that Suburban. Then we just bought the Santa Fe. We bought the one with third row seats. Then you got the Tucson, which is kind of the smaller version. Now what they have is the Kona. The best example I can give you is you see that Subaru Crosstrek everywhere. I've really grown about 2,000 miles into driving it. It is just growing on me every day. It's quick, so it has no power problem. I bring it up over Parley's all the time. It's incredibly convenient. It gets 30 miles to the gallon. It is seats four really comfortably. The trunk is small, but if you're a single, you know, one person user, you're not a family of four, this is not your car. This is that small SUV. So I would tell you, if you're looking around, look at that. I've told you before about the Ioniq and how much I liked it. This one fits into the match. Like, I've just been so continually impressed by what I've experienced with Hyundai. Now, here's the cool thing. If you go to murdochhyundai.com and you look it up, so they have one Kona that's on for $20,000, another that's up for $22,000, another's up that's $24,000. Like, that's the price point we're talking about. 30 miles the gallon, good power, four-door, really zippy, fun, looks good, great car. So check it out at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. You get the Murdoch Guarantee, car washes for life, safety inspection for life, five-day price match guarantee, return policy, and you get the 100,000 Hyundai Assurance with every purchase. So let's take a look at the play of Alec Burks and Royce O'Neal, who they are. So Royce O'Neal is just a great story, and what's even better about Royce O'Neal, frankly, is the contract. So he's under contract for two more years. The Jazz have found a real gem. He came being able to pass and dribble. He's learning how to shoot, and he's become really solid. If we run through his numbers, obviously there's no – what's interesting to me, first of all, is how much – he took shots everywhere. He was a much better corner three shooter than above the break three-point shooter, but that seemed to improve a little bit as the year went on. His shooting was pretty wide-ranging. He was 40% corners, 33% above the break. He had little stretches of the season where he really couldn't shoot at all, and he just kind of fought through them. He comes in at low usage rate, middle of the pack for his position on points per scoring attempt. And we're talking about an elite defensive player. And this was my discussion all year long with him, is Lou Williams or Royce O'Neale. And there's a great value to having somebody who can just go get a bucket. But what Royce O'Neale can do defensively to me has the same value as the Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams, who comes off the bench, doesn't play any defense at all, and is able to, and scores. He plays defense and, frankly, scores at a much better rate than they play defense. I think this is a really valuable player. In theory, he's 24 years old. We shouldn't see massive development out of him, but the Jazz have kind of fought that a little bit. Some interesting things on him. He shoots at the rim a huge percent, 83rd percentile of percentage of shots at the rim, and then just does not take long twos. He is not, and this is a little bit, this is interesting. I don't think we probably realize this. This is his area for improvement. Of players at his position, he's in the 8th percentile of rim finishing. He's in the 42nd percentile of overall shooting, but he's in the 8th percentile of rim finishing. So really not a good finisher. For all the hard drives, all the aggressiveness, he's not an elite athlete. That's where the undrafted aspect of him shows up, right? So he can dribble, he can pass, but he's not an elite athlete. He's not an elite shooter. And so he gets going to the basket. He's not able to get over on top of the tin very often. And that suddenly, that's where he is. He's 8th percentile as a rim finisher. So that's an area where he'll have to try to improve and get a little bit better. 40% three-point shooter puts him in the 57th percentile, and his 36% is what they have him as non-corner, which is too high. I think they're wrong on that, but maybe they took some cleaning the glass takes out blowout time and things like that. So they have him as an average three-point shooter, below average at the rim, and then you talk about his defense, it's just incredible. So that's exactly who he is, and I think that's exactly who he's going to be. I wouldn't try to be pushing anything more on him. I think he's a super off the bench player. As we get better, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with his numbers. I think it's a hard combination, but you know, he got a lot of recognition this season for what a good defensive player he is. When you have Kevin Pelton putting him up in the all-defensive team and things like that. He's really one of the better defensive players in the league. And that, I think, is how you have to view him. And I think we just picked apart his offense a little bit, but maybe he was the 6th best real plus-minus defensive player. Only Robert Covington, Kyle Anderson, Andre Iguodala, Tabo Cephalosha, Otto Porter were better. Worth noting on Tabo there. Our other one to look at today is Alec Burks. And I thought that Alec Burks played well in the playoffs was interesting to me, because the playoffs got down to an isolation, one-on-one, push-the-tempo game, and Alec got better. And that is kind of who Alec is. And so that makes some sense. Now, he did not have a great year. His points per scoring opportunity, according to Cleaning the Glass, puts him in the 27th percentile of all players in his position, while he's in the 82nd percentile in usage. Okay, that's a bad combo. And he doesn't pass much. The year prior, he was the bottom passer in 16-17. He was in the 1 percentile of assist rate. 1 percentile. This year, he was up a little bit. He was better passing, but he really passed a lot in 13-14 and 14-15 and has not since. But he played 61 games and he's healthy, which I think is the most important thing. His rim finishing is still a significant issue. And it always has been, by the way. His rim finishing, well, actually, his two-point percentage is the significant issue, not his rim finishing. His rim finishing has slid a little bit. He's in the 64th percentile in rim finishing. He was in the 15th percentile in overall efficiency. His two-point percentage, so this sometimes is the short shots or is taking the mid-range shots, His last 4 years, 19th percentile, 23rd percentile, 37th percentile, 24th percentile, according to Cleaning the Glass. And as I said, this year he's 15th percentile in effective field goal percentage. I'm not sure that this system works for him. Our system got blown up in the playoffs because of the switching of Houston, and so we played differently, and then he thrived for a while. And I think that's worth noting, and it's a tribute to what Alec can do well, and it's a tribute to why I think there is a somebody out there that, if I'm Sacramento, I'd love to have Alec Burks. I think he plays hard, he plays right, he's a good kid, he would come out and give you points and relieve some of that pressure, and I think he could be really, really solid for you. You know, against Houston is when he looked at his best, right? And that's what's exciting if you're an Alec Burks fan, is that 12 points a game, 44% from the field, 46% from three, really played great. 12 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and maybe that style of game maximizes his athleticism, lets him play at full bore, does a lot of things for him. Because I haven't, that's the best we've seen him play in a little while. Worth noting on his health, and this is a really good sign to his future, his foul drawing went way back up. He stopped drawing fouls the two prior years when he just wasn't playing much off that Paul Pierce injury. Who can blame him? And this year, he was way up. Both his shot attempts were fouled, so that tells you he was going in to make contact, as well as just getting fouled. He didn't finish. His and one percentage was, I don't know what I think of that. It wasn't great. But that was, I think, worth noting that that's a real sign of his strength and his health being better. It's an interesting note on what a good rebounder he is. He's really a good, good rebounder. And that, I think, is something, again, of value. There's great value in Alec's game and what he does from that position, how he plays, what he does in certain matchups, that if I was another team, 1 year, $11 million, I would feel very, very comfortable going to get him. Today's show is brought to you by InterCap Lending. It's good people over there. I need to talk to Brock a little bit and see what's going on and check in with Steve, my guy Steve Carter. I haven't checked in with them in a little while. Steve Carter is the guy who helped me with our refinance, and he can help you as well. Here's the best part. If you tell them you're with Locked On Jazz and you redo a loan with InterCap Lending, they'll do their appraisal for free. That's sometimes as much as $1,000, I think. Maybe not that much, but I feel like it was, when we did ours, 385-885-28. That's 385-885-28. That's Steve's number. So why InterCap? As Steve Carter says, 'cause we make mortgage as easy as ordering a pizza. Yeah. Well, that's their goal. They're going to use technology, the benefit, to make it easy. And I'd frankly tell you that they've done a pretty darn good job of it. Why else InterCap? You've got a local Utah company who's been one of the largest independent mortgage companies in the country. They've now moved to Utah, so you have their strength of power, and you've also got some local ties to them if you're in Utah. If not, you can use them outside of Utah as well. They're hyper-responsive. They embrace change. The borrow experience they're trying to give you is of elite level. They're hyper-responsive was so true with Steve Carter. He was unbelievable. Their embrace change, you can see in the tech, in the app, and their borrow experience. Frankly, they're a direct issuer. They're servicing their own loan, so they have some flexibility in what they can do. So if you have you're self-employed, have business assets, multiple properties, any credit issue, let them take a look at your loan. They've been doing this for over 40 years and can really help you out. And it will be a little more difficult than ordering a pizza, but not much. InterCap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. Steve Carter's number again is 385-885-28. That's 385-885-28. 28. I think the Warriors are going to win the series. But I have a number that has jumped out to me that has me intrigued. And that is that the Warriors' defense is doing absolutely nothing to the Rockets and their ability to get good shots. So during the regular season, the Rockets took, I love this stat, you've started to hear from, quantified shot quality. That measures the likelihood of any shot going in if the average player takes the shot. So during the regular season, Houston was number one in the league at 53.8. By the way, the Jazz were number two. So the quality of looks Quinn Snyder gets for his group, great. Now the Warriors are far and away the best shooting team in the league. Far, far and away. So if you look at quantified shot quality and then what's the difference how a team shot compared to the quality of shots they're getting, the Warriors are 5.0 above their average. The next closest is Minnesota at 2.7, then Cleveland at 2.1, then Toronto at 1.7. Okay, so it's not even close. By the way, we were negative. For all the work Quinn Snyder does to get all these looks, our guys shot below average. So some shooting would help us. Okay, the Warriors, far and away the best, and the Rockets were kind of middle of the pack, 10th. And that's what it's going to take for the Warriors to win, because what is interesting so far in this series is how much better shot quality the Rockets are getting. Defensively, by the way, this has not been a Warrior strength all year long. Their defensive shot quality is 16th in the league, right on league average. The Jazz, by the way, were 6th, and team shot right about what they were supposed to against us, interestingly. The Rockets, of all things, defensively, as good as they were this year, did not allow a lot of good looks. Their switching defense, they had one of the worst shot quality defenses. Okay, so why do I bring this up? Because in the last game, and maybe it was unusual, the shot quality, oh, I have it backwards. The Warriors' shot quality, no, that's, I must have pulled, huh. Let me look at this again. I had defense up instead of offense. Okay, sorry. So, in the first game of the series, the Rockets' shot quality was 53.5, which is right about their season average. Okay? And remember we talked about the Warriors were average. They didn't really change it. So it's right on their season average. And the Warriors had an incredible shooting night. The Warriors, who are usually plus five, were plus eight. Okay? They had an incredible shooting night. However, in the last game, the Rockets' shot quality went up to 54.9, so it's getting better, and the Warriors was only 50.7. The Warriors shot right on average, okay? So that's, they had an off night, I would say, because they're a plus five team usually. But the Rockets' shot quality was 4 percentage points better than the Warriors in the last game. The Warriors are the best shooting team in the league. They're not going to have that bad a shooting night very often where they're just an average shooting team like they were. Their shot quality was bad, which is interesting to me because it means the Rockets are impacting them defensively by not letting them get their off-ball screens and getting some of the looks they usually get. And then the other part of this that's interesting is that the Warriors' defense is not having an impact on the Rockets' offense. And for all the talk about isolation stuff, isolation stuff of the Warrior of the Rockets in this series is incredibly efficient. Now, you don't want to become dependent on it, and you still got to do some things off it, but it's incredibly efficient. They're averaging 1.2 points per isolation. I mean, that's, you just do that every play if you can. James Harden's at 1.25, Chris Paul's at 1, and Eric Gordon's through the roof. Probably unsustainable. Steph Curry is having a bad isolation series, which makes you wonder about his knee. I still think the Warriors win this series. I still actually think the Warriors might win this series in five. But something is going on that's swinging this series. The Rockets are having a bigger impact on the Warriors than the Warriors are having on the Rockets. That would be my takeaway. That is today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Thanks very much for tuning in. I super appreciate it. I'll talk to you in a week. Have a great one.